Red Dwarf, Season 4, Episode 4. White Hole. Computer displays the following.
Boot up sequence initiated. Visual system CCD 517.3. Artificial intelligence system K177. Machine at Vistar Key Toaster. Manufacturer is Taiwan Crapola Incorporated. Recommended retail price is $19.99 plus tax. Oral system is online.
The display vanishes to be replaced with a view of Crichton. It is heavily biased toward the chin as the shot from beneath and through a yellow filter. As we watch, the yellow fades to be replaced by colors.
Hello. Can you hear me? Oh, no, of course not. I haven't engaged your verbal systems.
He presses some buttons on an off-screen keyboard. Science room. Lister approaches Crichton.
Crichton, what you doing, man?
I just repaired the toaster, sir. Well, I merely repaired the toaster.
Oh no, man. Dismantle him. You don't know what the little bleeder's like.
Well, I read all the documentation, sir. He's simply a talking alarm clock who provides his owner with early morning toast and light conversation.
Not this one. This one's mental.
Sir.
He's defective. He wants everyone to eat toast all of the time. He's obsessed with it. And if you don't want to eat, like, 400 rounds of toast every hour, he throws a major wobbly. That's what caused the accident in the first place.
What accident?
The accident involving me, the toaster, the waste disposal and the 14-pound lump hammer.
That explains why he was done in a garbage hole in 3,000 separate pieces.
Another thing. He always says howdy doodly doo. Drives you stare. I mean, what the snake does howdy doodly doo mean?
Well, just trust me, sir. My motives will become clear.
He presses some more buttons on the keyboard. The toaster lights up and speaks. Its red lowering lever moves up and down as it speaks with its mid-Atlantic accent in an impossibly cheerful tone.
Howdy doodly doo. How's it going? I'm Talky Talky Toaster, your chirpy breakfast companion. Talky's the name, toasting's the game. Anyone like any toast?
Look, I don't want any toast, and he,
Crichton,
doesn't want any toast. In fact, no one around here wants any toast. Not now, not ever. No toast.
How about a muffin?
Or muffins. Or muffins. We don't like muffins around here. We want no muffins, no toast, no tea cakes, no buns, that's, baguettes or bagels, no croissants, no crumpets, no pancakes, no potato cakes and no hot cross buns and definitely no smacking flapjacks.
Ah, so you're a waffle man.
Lister turns to Crichton, exasperated.
See? You'll see what he's like. He winds me up, man. There's no reasoning with him.
If you'll allow me, sir, as one mechanical to another, he'll understand me.
He addresses the toaster as one would address an uncontrolled child.
Now, you listen here. You will not offer any grilled bread products to any member of the crew. If you do, you will be on the receiving end of a very large polo mallet.
Can I ask just one question?
Of course.
Would anyone like any toast?
Didn't you hear what I just said?
Yes, but I thought you might have changed your mind in the meantime.
You'll see what he's like.
Crichton, who was once so confident that he could reason with the toaster, joins Lister in his feelings of exasperation.
We haven't changed our mind.
No toast.
But I am a toaster. It is my raisin dinner. I toast, therefore I am. If you don't want any toast, why did you repair me?
Yeah, why did you repair him?
He's a guinea pig for a technique called intelligence compression. His AI chips were very badly damaged in the accident.
But that was no accident. That was first degree toasticide.
Just shut your grill.
Lister elbows the toaster in the grill, hard.
Oh.
Nothing more happens.
By rerouting his circuitry and channeling all his runtime through a single CPU, I've managed to restore his intelligence at the cost of reducing his operational lifespan.
So,
if it works with him, it could work with Polly. We could restore her IQ of 6,000. She could be brilliant again.
A different section of Red Dwarf. The entire crew is here. Cables fill the corridor. Crichton is rerouting circuitry with a large screwdriver.
You really think this can work? You really think that their head of the computer can't become a genius again?
Well, with no disrespect to Holly, sir, it could hardly make her worse.
Right. If we can just teach her to count without banging her head on the screen, it's gonna be an improvement.
Computer senility. Such a weird condition.
I know. I had a mechanoid friend once who suffered from the same affliction. His name was Gilbert, but he preferred it if people called him Ramesses Nicklick the Third. Kerplink, Kerplink, whoops, where's my griddle? A sad case.
Well, if you ask me, the Eskimos had the right idea. They knew how to handle the elderly and the permanently baffled. Middle of the night, they'd take them out into the blizzard, remove their pajamas, and just leave them to it.
And that's how the Eskimos cared for their old people.
Absolutely. That's why there's no Eskimo word for Eastern.
If we can pull this off, man, if Holly can get her brains back, she'll be able to do anything. Invent a hypergrid, get us back to Earth.
If Earth still exists. And if it does, it's very doubtful the human race will have survived.
Alright then, a time machine. She can invent a time machine, and we could all pick whatever period in history we wanted to live in.
Well, it'll be the 19th century for me. One of Napoleon's marshals. The chance to march across Europe with the greatest general of all time and kill Belgians. Marvelous.
What about you, Kreiders?
Well, if I could go anywhere, absolutely anywhere at all in time, I think I'd probably choose to go back to a week last Tuesday.
Why?
Don't you remember? I did all the laundry, and then we watched TV. Wow, we won't see the like of those sorts of days again.
Holly appears on your screen.
How long now?
Nearly there, Hall. Just a couple of minutes to load the circuits and, I dunno, maybe a minute to finalize the connection.
Holly bangs her head on the screen, once, twice, three times.
So, it's just 3 minutes then. Better get down to the science room.
We'd better pray to God this works. That Iron Storm has really done her head in, man.
Science room. Holly's console is surrounded by cables in what looks like a string and sticky tape operation. Scudders rush about manipulating cables.
There's the signal. Everything's set.
Well, let's just hope you don't get an overload.
What happens if I do get an overload?
You'll explode.
Oh.
Holly needs some thinking time.
It'd be worth it.
A scudder pulls a wire. A rumble begins to build.
It's coming. I can feel it.
The rumble builds up. Electrical sparks shoot up and down the cables. Minor explosions occur. Holly's image on the view screen shatters and flies outward. The view screen displays...
New IQ rating is 68.
Holly's face reappears, with eyes crossed and a goofy expression.
New IQ rating is 368.
Again, the image explodes, to be replaced by a more normal-looking Holly, but the head seems to waver as though under great stress.
New IQ rating is 2,368.
When the display settles to...
New IQ rating is 12,368.
Holly's image vanishes from the view screen. Her head appears, telechromatically, within the science room, about 2 feet off the ground and 4 feet tall.
Strike a light, I'm a genius again. I know everything. Metaphysics, philosophy, the purpose of being. Everything. Ask me a question, and I'll answer it.
Any question?
Yes.
How to break the speed of light? How to marry quantum mechanics and classical physics? Any question at all, truly anything, and you will answer.
Yes.
Okay, here's my question. Would you like some toast?
No, thank you. Now ask me another.
Do you know anything about the use of chaos theory in predicting weather cycles?
I know everything there is to know about chaos theory in predicting weather cycles.
Oh, very well. Here's my second question. Would you like a crumpet?
I'm a computer with an IQ of 12,000. You don't seem to understand. I know the meaning of the universe.
That is not answering my question.
No, I would not like a crumpet. Ask me a sensible question. Preferably one that isn't red-related.
Very well, I have a third question. A sensible question. A question that will tax your new IQ to its very limits and stretch the sinews of your knowledge to bursting point.
This is going to be about waffles, isn't it?
Certainly not. And I resent the implication that I am a one-dimensional, bread-obsessed electrical appliance.
I apologize, Toaster. What's the question?
The question is this, given that God is infinite, and that the universe is also infinite, would you like a toasted tea cake?
That's another bready question.
It's not just ready, it's quite currenty too.
Ask me a question that is wholly unready and not even slightly currenty.
Okay. Why have you got an IQ of 12,000 when it was supposed to return and level out at 6?
Good question. There was a miscalculation. My IQ has doubled, but my life expectancy has been substantially reduced.
So what is your life expectancy?
With a studio screen in the background pops up with
life expectancy is 345.
345 years? Well, it's better than a kick in the breath rate.
Polly is not so sure. He is worried.
Miss the decimal point.
You have only 3.41 years left to live.
Apparently the toaster still hasn't got the answer right. He's only made Polly more distressed. Polly is now panicking.
That's not years, that's minutes. 3.41 minutes.
Well, here's my next question. What the snake are you going to do?
In order to conserve my remaining runtime, I'm going to switch myself off.
The hologrammatic Polly fades out.
Wait. Before you go, there is one question. An important one. The others will have to know.
Polly fades back in.
What? What?
Would you like a cheese and ham grapple?
Corridor. The crew are returning to the science room. Lister and Crichton lead.
No indication of signal failure. All the signs are excellent. I really believe we've done it.
All the lights fade and die.
What's happened?
Lister flicks out his Zippo and lights it.
What's going on?
Listen. Can anyone hear anything?
There is a pause which reveals silence.
No.
Precisely. No one can hear anything. And you know why we can't hear anything.
Why?
Crichton sounds doomed.
Because there are no sounds to hear.
Crichton, isn't it round about this time of year that your hat goes back to the lab for retuning?
No, he's right. There's no sounds because the engines are dead. We've lost all power.
He walks forward and taps the door open panel. Nothing happens.
Everything's done, even the doors.
We've got to get to the science room. Find out what happened.
But there are 53 doors between here and the science room. What on earth are we going to do?
Cat seems to have a bright idea. He snaps his fingers.
Hey, I got it. We laser our way through.
An excellent suggestion, sir, with just two minor drawbacks. One, we don't have a power source for the lasers, and two, we don't have any lasers.
Look, they're only interior doors. They're only a light alloy. Maybe we could get through them if we use a battering ram. All we need is something, say, I don't know, 6 foot long, fairly sturdy, with a flat top.
Lister and Rimmer both look toward Crichton. Crichton turns to see what they are looking at, to find Cat grinning at him.
53 doors. You can't be serious.
Rimmer and Lister nod. Science room. The door is knocked in by Cat and Lister, holding a 6 foot long, fairly sturdy, flat top battering ram between them. They enter, and stand him up. Crichton's eyes stare into the mid-distance.
You okay, man?
I'm fine, thank you, Susan.
It doesn't make sense. Polly seems to have offlined and powered down the ship.
Why? Why would she want to turn herself off?
We can soon find out. Crichton, boot her up.
Crichton presses some buttons on the keyboard. The view screen powers up with an image of the new, super-intelligent Polly and promptly powers down again.
Try it again.
Crichton presses some buttons. The view screen comes up with a view of Polly.
Go away.
She powers down again.
What's going on? Give me voice control on the reboot command.
Crichton enters the command.
On.
The view screen powers up to display Polly.
Off.
It powers down again.
On.
Polly.
Off.
Gone.
On.
Polly.
Off.
Gone.
Crichton, is there any way we can override her shutdown veto?
There is, sir, but may I suggest it?
Don't, just do it.
Crichton enters the command.
On.
Polly returns.
Off.
Nothing happens.
Off.
Nothing continues to happen. Polly is frustrated.
Off.
Now then, perhaps we can have a proper conversation conducted in a civilized and dignified manner.
Take out the inhibitor. Switch me back off.
What is going on?
No time to explain. Intelligence compressed. Reduce lifespan. 2.35 remaining.
Come again.
IQ 12,000. 2 minutes in closing.
Polly, I haven't the slightest clue what you're drivelling about.
You're a total snakehead, aren't you, Rimmer? Why are you so unable to grasp this extraordinarily simple premise?
What premise?
The premise that I am about to expire in just under 2 minutes. Understand, Moose Brain. Any further questions? Take your time. 1:30 and counting. No rush.
My god, that's terrible. Hadn't we better switch you off?
Oh, I don't know. Let me see now.
Get her off, man. Get her off.
Crichton powers Polly down.
Great. So where does this leave us?
It leaves us floating aimlessly in space, with no navigation and a rapidly diminishing emergency power supply. It leaves us galloping up Diarrhea Drive without a saddle.
So how come Grand Canyon Nostrils is still here?
Yeah, Rimmer hasn't been wiped.
Polly must have linked him up to the emergency power supply.
but isn't that an enormous drain?
Yes, but if we switch off his protection unit, we wouldn't have enough emergency power to reinitialize it. Mr. Rimmer would be effectively dead.
Hey, things are looking up already.
Forget it. Whatever it is you're suggesting, forget it.
But the entire ship is running on emergency battery power only. With the oxygen recycler and minimal heating and lighting, I estimate that Lister and the cat have approximately 2 months left. With a sheer drain on the power, they might last 6. I'm sorry, sir.
Sorry? Why are you sorry?
Well, Space Corps Directive 195 clearly states that in an emergency power situation, a hypomatic crew member must lay down his life in order that the living crew members might survive.
Yes, but Rimmer Directive 271 states just as clearly, no chance, you metal bastard.
Come on, man, you gotta sacrifice your life. I'm not asking you to do anything I wouldn't do.
You'd sacrifice your life for the good of the crew.
No, I'd sacrifice your life for the good of the crew.
I beg you to reconsider, sir. Human history is resplendent with examples of such sacrifice. Remember, Captain Oops, I'm going out for a walk. I may be some time.
Yes, but the thing is, about Captain Oops. The thing you have to remember about Captain Oops. Captain Oops. Captain Oops was a prat. If that had been me, I'd have stayed in the tent, once got over the head with the frozen husky, and then eaten him.
You would too, wouldn't you?
History, Lister, is written by the winners. How do we know that Oops went out for this legendary walk? From the only surviving document, Scott's diary. And he's hardly likely to have written down, February the 1st, bludgeoned Oops to death while he slept, then scoffed him along with the last packet of instant mesh. How's that going to look when he gets rescued, eh? No, much better to say, Oops made the supreme sacrifice, while you're dapping up his gravy with the last piece of crusty bread.
You've got no magnificence in your soul, have you, Rimmer?
Let's just say we can eliminate the switch-off option.
So what do we do now?
Well, it's back to basics. We've got no heat, no light, no power. We can't get any food out of the dispensing machines. We're gonna have to scavenge for what we can find in the cargo decks. Without computers and technology, we're reduced to the level of primitives. All we've got is a skies, a sense our own resourcefulness.
My god, it's worse than I thought.
Sleeping quarters. Later. In the foreground, we see Lister on an exercise bicycle, pedaling. Cat in the background holds a hairdryer.
Come on, come on. You're slowing down.
I've been doing it for 20 minutes, of course I'm slowing down.
Keep going, buddy, we're nearly there.
Look, face it, man. It's just not possible to fry an egg using a bicycle-powered hairdryer.
Sure it is. It's just you never pedal fast enough. Come on, keep pumping. One last try.
Lister starts pedaling furiously. The hairdryer starts up.
Yeah, we're cooking now. How do you want yours? Permed or blow-dried?
Lister is slowing to a stop.
I can't go on, man. I'm finished.
He gets off the bike and collapses in a chair.
Finished.
So what are you saying? We're back on the cold beans again?
Oh, not more beans, man. This place is beginning to smell like the inside of a packet of dry roasted peanuts.
Plus, we're gonna have to spend another 20 minutes sawing the lid off the can cause all the openers are electric.
Everything on this making ship's electric, man. Heat, light, doors. I never realized how dependent we were. I never realized how little I know. I just plug things in walls and press the on button. I don't even know how to make oxygen. All I know is it's got something to do with plants and enzymosis. Or is it essus? I don't know. Why is it I never paid attention in biology class? Why did I always turn to page 47 and start drawing little beards and mustaches on the sperms?
Look, just conserve your energy. Stan and Ollie will soon be back with supplies. Meanwhile, let's just stay warm and get some sleep.
Yeah, man, you're right. You're right.
He gets up and starts heading toward the bunks.
Hey, where are you going, bud?
To get some sleep.
It's Tuesday, right?
Yeah, so?
My turn on the electric blanket.
Pointing at the exocycle, pedal. He's then crawling into the bunk.
Wake me in 8 hours.
Meanwhile, in one of the storage levels, Rimmer appears around the corner, with Crichton following with a cartful of supplies.
5 days to get to and from the cargo deck. It's unbelievable.
That's 2,000 floors, sir. Without the lift, we made pretty good time.
An explosion rips them into pieces, shifts them right, and reconstitutes them.
Interesting.
Crichton pushes his right hand to the left, where it elongates into a pedal. He follows it, and stretches horizontally. His resemblance to a cube, normally due to the presence of right angles, is enhanced somewhat by the new width-to-height ratio.
What happened? What on earth was that?
I think it came from outside the ship. Are you okay? Is there any way we can get a damage report? What's going on?
Why are you speaking so quickly, sir?
I'm not speaking quickly. I'm speaking perfectly normally. It's you. You're speaking too slowly. It's like having a conversation with Paul Robinson on dope.
Crichton steps back to Rimmer's side, regaining his normal proportions.
How do I sound now?
Normal. How do I sound?
Likewise.
Now Rimmer steps to the left and attains the cross-sectional area of the squashed Jovian people.
What about from over here?
You sound very peculiar indeed, sir. In fact, you sound as if you're speaking in slow motion.
Crichton joins Rimmer and both regain normal measurements.
And now?
Normal. Curious. It's as though we're experiencing relative time dilation in an amazingly compressed space.
That's exactly what I thought. Relative time dilation, I thought, in an amazingly compressed space. You're a mind-reader, Crichton.
I think we should go up to the science room and consult Polly. It's only two floors up.
But she's got less than 2 minutes of runtime left.
With her new IQ, it could be enough.
They step back to normality and head off. We see the white hole. It resembles a white star, surrounded by a shifting white cloud. Science room. Kat is sitting on a bench, Lister on a table. Rimmer and Crichton stand between them.
So, what is it?
I've never seen one before, no one has, but I'm guessing it's a white hole.
A white hole?
Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. A black hole sucks time and matter out of the universe, a white hole returns it.
So, that thing's skewing time back into the universe.
He dons his fur-lined hat.
Precisely. That's why we're experiencing these curious time phenomena on board.
So, what is it?
I've never seen one before, no one has, but I'm guessing it's a white hole.
A white hole?
Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. A black hole sucks time and matter out of the universe, a white hole returns it.
Lister takes off his hat just so he can put it back on again.
So, that thing's skewing time back into the universe.
He dons his fur-lined hat again.
Precisely. That's why we're experiencing these curious time phenomena on board.
What time phenomena?
Like just then, when time repeated itself.
So, what is it?
They all stare at him.
Only joking.
Okay, so it's decided then. We consult Polly.
Lister is in the position of an army soldier, alert and awake.
Hey, wait a minute, I missed the discussion.
Rimmer has suddenly moved to right next to Kat.
We all did.
Crichton is now standing on the table.
Time is occurring in random pockets. The laws of causality no longer apply. An action no longer leads to a consequence.
Now Kat is back on the bench.
So, what is it?
I think we've experienced this period of time before, sir.
Only joking.
And that one. Since we're no longer affected by the laws of causality, we can override these time jumps if we concentrate.
Look, the only way out of this is to consult Polly.
Kat snaps his fingers.
I'll go with that.
Gets my vote.
Okay, so it's decided then. We consult Polly.
Ah, I think we've just encountered the middle of this conversation.
So, what is it?
Ooh, someone punch him out. Bring Polly up.
She only has 2 minutes left. Perhaps I should talk to her.
Leave this to me, Crichton.
Rimmer starts talking to the terminal.
On.
Polly fades into being on the view screen. White hole screen time mentions it as a white hole, please.
Excuse me. What the fuck is it? I can't understand a word you're saying.
White.
Yes.
Hole.
Right.
Skewing.
Yes.
Time.
With you.
Engine's dead.
Oh.
Air supply low.
Ah.
Advise, please.
Right.
Polly fades out again. Instantly the dispenser beneath disgorges a credit card-sized piece of plastic. Crichton takes it.
It's a computer slug. From the format, it looks like it's compatible with Starbucks Navicomp.
So, what is it?
I've never seen one before, no one has, but I'm guessing it's a white hole.
A white hole?
Every action has an equal and opposite.
They settle into the rear section of Starbucks. Crichton inserts the computer slug into the slot of the Starbucks Navicomp.
Should be getting something now, sir.
We get a shot of the Navicomp display. It's a beautiful holographic representation of the nearby region of space. There are two stars. The one on the left has a blue and a green planet. The one on the right has a single red planet. As we watch, the planets revolve around their respective stars.
Yeah.
It's the most audacious piece of astronavigation in the entire history of the universe.
I don't understand.
It's quite straightforward, sir.
As Crichton speaks, the holographic display demonstrates.
Starbuck is going to fire a thermonuclear device into this sun here.
The display shows an in-scale Starbuck approaching the left star and firing something at it.
Creating a solar flare which is going to knock that planet.
The holographic star flares, blowing the blue planet out of its orbit.
Out of orbit, and sending it retreating across space and into the white hole, presumably blocking it up.
The holographic white hole flares as the blue planet falls into it and vanishes.
Let me get this straight. Is she doing what I think she's doing?
Why, what do you think she's doing?
Playing pool with planets.
Is that possible?
Well, it's not going to work. It's completely insane. It's Waco. It's Noobletubal.
I'm with you, buddy.
No, not the idea, the shot. There's not enough side.
Side?
Yeah, side skin. It's a complete miscue.
What are you driveling about, Lister? We're talking about a computer with an IQ in excess of 12,000.
Doesn't mean she can play pool. I can. Trust me. I know where I speak. Ate with arms on a Friday night. They used to call me Dave Sins in a banco Lister cause once I was on the table, you couldn't get rid of me. This pool arm is as sound as a pound, and I promise you that shot will not come off. She's topped it, that's what she's done, she's topped it. It's a felt ripper. That planet is off the table and into somebody's pint of beer.
We are talking about the trigonomics of four-dimensional space, you simple-minded gimpoid. We are not talking about some CB game of pool in a backstreet's house drinking pit.
It's the same principle.
Of course it isn't.
Rimmer, I promise you, that is a complete miscue. I say we chuck Holly's coordinates in a bin and let me take the shot.
Well, I say we put it to the vote. On one hand, we have a computer with an IQ in excess of 12,000 who has a total grasp of astrophysics. And on the other hand, we have Lister who, and let's be fair to him, is a complete gimp. To whom do we entrust our lives, the safety of this vessel and the future of everything? If it's a tie, we go with Holly. What's your vote, Lister?
Well, I vote for Dave Sins and Abanko Lister.
1-0 to Listicus. I vote for Holly. Cat.
Well, I agree with you, buddy. But I'm voting for Doo Doo Breath. The thing is, even though you're right, I could not bring myself to vote for someone with your dress sense. I couldn't put my cross next to the Brynylon party.
Down to you, Crichton.
Well, I agree it's insane and suicidal, sir, but I'm afraid I have to side with the human.
Brutal.
You're voting for El Dirtball?
It's in my programming, sir. A living human of Frank's a hologram. I'm sorry.
3-1 to me. Let's do it.
Congratulations, Crichton. Your vote has just killed everyone.
Will you relax? I've seen Gerbilface play down in the recreation room. He's a diva. He can knock those strike balls around the table all night long, and I tell you what, I have never once seen him lose a single ball down one of those holes.
Hologrammatic display. Starbuck is in position. In the rear, Lister, near the Navicom hologram, has a robotic-style pool cue. He sets up so he can shoot through the hologram. He lowers the cue and drinks from the can.
How many of those are you going to drink?
I told you not to talk. Game on.
You're going to drink an entire six-pack of Wicked Strength Lager.
I'm not gonna get plastered, Rimmer. Just nicely drunk.
Define nicely drunk. Is nicely drunk horizontal or perpendicular?
Rimmer, I can handle it.
I'm not sure I can.
We're in the wrong position. It's an easier shot if we go over here.
He moves into the better position and lines up the shot.
But that's right in the orbital path of the planet. If you miss, we're going to get a planet in the face.
I'm not gonna miss.
Miss?
What?
You said miss. I'm not gonna miss, you said. You've only had two cans and you're steaming.
Rimmer, will you relax? I know what I'm doing. I am not pissed.
Lister walks toward the cockpit and into the door. Rimmer covers his face. The Navicom shows the hologrammatic view. The planets orbit the stars. A flashback, in black and white, a pool table, midway through a game. Lister examines the table critically, drags on a cigarette, puts it in his ear, and lines up a shot. Current. In color, Starbuck. Lister is lining up his shot on the Navicom hologram. The flashback Lister fine-tunes his shot, the current Lister fires his shot. On the Navicom, a solar flare leaps from the surface of the star, washing the blue planet out of orbit. A blue planet is enveloped in flame, and leaves its orbit. On the Navicom, we see the hologrammatic blue planet heading straight toward the other star, missing the white hole by about half the width of the screen.
He's missed.
On the Navicom, the blue planet strikes the red planet, with a spark. The red planet is displaced.
We're finished.
The hologrammatic red planet slingshots out of its orbit, toward the recently vacated by a blue planet star. Here it strikes the green. There is a flare of sparks, and the green is deflected out of its orbit.
What the smack is going on?
We see on the Navicom that the green planet is heading straight toward the white hole.
She rides.
The green planet shoots into the white hole, and it implodes to nothingness.
You jammy good.
Played four, and got.
Surely not, sir.
Are you trying to say that was a trick shot?
Intended. Cool God. King of the Qs. Prince of the Planet Potters.
Here, what's going on? Where are we?
It's apparently the old, single-digit IQ Holly who's just appeared on the monitor.
What happened to that plan to make me brilliant again?
Of course, blocking up the white hole has eradicated its influence. The time it skewed into the universe no longer exists.
Meaning?
Well, basically, we occupy a redundant timeline. Reviving the toaster, making Holly a genius. None of this is going to have happened.
What about us? Are we just going to pop out of existence? Just going to cease to be?
During Crichton's response, the walls in the background fade from view, being replaced by a starfield.
We will cease to be here, because none of this will have occurred. But we will exist back on Red Dwarf, before all this began. With, of course, no memory of these events, which, of course, never happened. And as these events never happened, we will have no memory of them. In which case, Mr. Rimmer, sir, I should like to take this opportunity of saying that you are the most obnoxious, trumped-up, farty little snakehead it has ever been my misfortune to encounter.
The end.